Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Standing in this evening on behalf of Phumelo Modene, and I will be with you tomorrow. Brilliant point of view show. Thank you so much, Fukuku, for taking us through. Gugule Tumfupi for taking us through, as she always does, Kaya Biz. Looking forward to covering some of the key news of the day with you today and of the week. Well, if you are an African, you have been, I hope, quite caught up in quite a bit of the political and geopolitical movements that are happening on our continent. Unfortunately and painfully, casualties have reached 13 of South African National Defence Force peacekeepers in the DRC as the army in the DRC and M23's conflict increases in tension. Finally, 7 days since the fact, according to Defence Minister Angie Motshekga, we have gotten some feedback, not only from the President this afternoon in form of a statement, as well as some updates from the very Defence Minister Angie Motshekga, as well as Deputy Defence Minister Bantu Horomisa and Minister of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation Ronald Nomola. It left us a little bit wanting. The updates were a bit late. And a little bit scattered. And so we thought it was quite important for us to just delve in today to understand a little bit more about what happened there. Before I introduce you to my guests for this first segment, obviously it is Wednesday, which means today we will be talking legal matters just after 9 o'clock. So be sure to have your legal questions ready for our legal expert Ntabiseng Dubazana. We'll be speaking about that from 9 till 10. But before that and after this conversation about the DRC, we'll turn our attention to Mpumalanga, two rather big stories. Two arrests have happened over the arson of over 50 Putco buses. It seems to have been a coordinated attack, according to the Transport Minister, Barbara Creasy, who is looking for Nat Joins to investigate a bit further. And we're going to be speaking to DA member of the Provincial Legislature, Bosman Khrobla, about the over 25 million rand that has been paid to suspended workers, which goes against public service guidelines. But first, let's head up to the East, Central and East Africa. Kicking off the show this morning, speaking to two excellent guests. Foreign policy journalist Peter Fabricius joins us to help us understand a little bit more about the context of this conflict and where we stand today. I am certain he has listened in on Angie Motshekga's press conference, and I'm really eager to hear his views on that. And then we'll turn our attention to veteran Africa correspondent and author of Do Not Disturb, and It's Our Turn to Eat, Ms. Michaela Wrong. Welcome to Point of View. All right, let's dive right into this. The Democratic Republic of Congo has been facing skirmishes and conflict for several years now, particularly on its eastern border with Rwanda. What is widely accepted to be Rwandan-backed rebel militia group M23 has finally taken over a key city of Goma. And that escalation in conflict occurred late last week and into the weekend, and during which up to now, 13 South African National Defence Force peacekeepers have perished. We've also lost three Malawian and a Uruguayan soldier who also died in those skirmishes. Peter Fabricius, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Please put this particular escalation in conflict into context for us.
Yeah, hi. So, sure. The M23, of course, has been around for quite a long time, over 10 years. It's composed of ethnic Tutsi Congolese, you know, living in the eastern part of the country. It claims that it's being persecuted by, you know, ethnic Hutus who fled from Rwanda and are being supported by the DRC government. We don't know the extent precisely of the truth of those claims. And it's being heavily supported by Rwanda. And that has been verified by the UN and many other experts. So there's, even though Rwanda likes to deny it when it suits it, it's true. And then that brings into question the whole issue of what is Rwanda's motive here. Is it really just supporting its fellow ethnic Tutsis, or does it have ulterior motives for being in the Congo, you know, exploiting minerals and gold, it's in particular, and so on. So, DRC grown increasingly resentful about this widening expansion of the M23 and asked SADC, its fellow SADC members, to intervene, which they did in December 2023 with a force called SAMIDIRC, the Southern SADC mission in the DRC. And that force just seems to have been inadequately equipped and supplied, maybe even motivated, and has suffered some quite serious defeats this past week, as you pointed out.
Peter, so let's talk a little bit about those peacekeeping forces. You rightly highlight the SA, the SAMI DRC, which is comprised of South African, Tanzanian, and Malawian forces. There's also MONUSCO, which is the UN-led UN Organization Stabilization Mission in the DRC. That's been around for over a decade, and South African National Defense Force members have been a part of that.
Yeah.
Do these coordinate, these two units? Because as I understand it, the casualties from South Africa came predominantly from the SADC unit, not from the UN side.
Yeah, they do. They do coordinate, I'm sure of that. I don't know the precise details of these operations and why, for example, as you say, most of the South African casualties were with SAMIDIRC. DRC, but yes, they essentially kind of had the same mission. I mean, MONUSCO is divided into a kind of orthodox, regular peacekeeping force, but it has a component with a robust mandate to go after rebel groups like M23. And one should say, by the way, that SAMIDRC is not really a peacekeeping force in the classic definition of that term. It's a peace enforcement mission. You know, it's got a got a really robust mandate, a fighting mandate, a combat mandate.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay, which brings us to today. If we may, we are hearing, I mean, and I thankfully I'm not 100% not fully familiar with too many briefings about skirmishes on the continent, but 7 days seems to be a long time to take for us to hear from an official government statement from the president, not only some sort of condolences to these families, but some explanation of the operation that went down. If my understanding of the unrolling and unraveling of the news, it came from news reporters. We heard from Fikile Malula at an ANC Lekgotla feedback session that we would be hearing from Angie Motshekga, the Minister of Defense. As we understand it, she has explained in today's press conference, she was in the DRC, and I'm not quite sure exactly the purpose of that trip. And then we only heard today from President Ramaphosa in a statement acknowledging and giving us some statement about this. Do you think that their explanations and how would you characterize their explanations?
Well, I mean, I completely agree with you and lots of other people that there has been quite a massive failure here in communication. You know, the president and the minister are very slow off the ground. Even the communication section were very slow to confirm the deaths last week. And so that's been pretty poor. You know, it's allowed, you know, rumors to circulate and spread and conjecture about what happened. It's still not, even after what they've said, it's not quite clear what the situation is on the ground. It seems like our forces are isolated and probably still trapped, but, you know, it's not something we're likely to get confirmed by them. So, yeah, it's been a pretty poor show, actually, from the communication point of view.
And it seems as though this view is even held within the ANC party. Malusi Gigaba, the minister, the chairperson of the Joint Standing Commission on Defence, was urging Minister Motshekga to address the issue. EFF leader Julius Malema saying the portfolio committee meeting was postponed simply because the Minister of Defence chose not to appear. I quote his ex-comment. And AfriForum has said, you know, they demand an immediate and a transparent investigation into the circumstances surrounding the M23 attack. To your understanding of and having heard, I mean, what and I'll play a clip for those who might have missed the shortly, to those who might have missed the press conference from the minister, but the broad explanation that she gave is that not without much prompting or without much motivation, she just says escalations heightened while she was visiting Kinshasa. They moved over to Saki to extract injured and potentially deceased SANDF soldiers, found their way to Goma. Then there was fighting happening above them. A white flag was lifted to try and secure safe passage for the peacekeepers. I'm not quite sure what she's doing in the middle of it. What did you take away from her explanation?
It's terribly confusing because just that white flag incident, for example, I've heard different explanations of it. You know, the spokesman the other day, yesterday, I think, Superior Fellini told me, don't believe for a moment that's a surrender. They raised the white flag in order to, because they were approached by M23 representatives who wanted to do, you know, a temporary truce to remove their dead. And South African forces said, okay, as long as we can remove our injured. And then the representatives went away and didn't come back, and so nothing happened. But then someone told me today there was, in fact, a truce, maybe even a truce that's still holding, and that, you know, there was removal of, you know, of dead on both sides and maybe wounded. But it's just not 100% clear to me, to be honest.
As we understand it, the president of the DRC, Kenyan President Ruto called for an EAC summit today. Have we heard anything from that?
No, I do know EAC summit, or East African Community Summit, which I know that South African government is placing quite a lot of faith in, because they hope it will bring Tshisekedi and Kagame together, you know, and to on at least a temporary ceasefire.
And what we also heard from this press conference today from Minister Motshekga is that from Minister Ronald Lamola of Durco, in speaking about the diplomatic path from here, was that they anticipate a SADC summit to take place this Friday.
Yeah.
I would love to hear from you, Peter, what are the terms that are going to be laid down, and how will they differ from the December Lorenzo process discussions that fell apart?
Yeah, look, my understanding is that summit will basically agree that they need to pull some DRC out of Congo, and the discussion will just be about, in a sense, the terms. So, you know, the Samadirk mission was extended in December for another year, so there was an extension from the first year. And so it's due to leave in December this year. In different circumstances, you know, they might have wanted to keep it going, you know, but clearly they're hurting pretty badly after what is quite a serious defeat, I would say. I mean, I don't wish to characterize it as a complete defeat, but a pretty bruising encounter with M23 backed by Rwanda, one must say. Mm. And so I think they're looking really for a kind of orderly retreat, if you want to put it that way. Over what period? I mean, will it be, I think they might be thinking to do it over the year, but they want a peace process to be in place and a ceasefire, so it doesn't look like they're just running for cover and that they're leaving behind something constructive, you know, something that might keep the local civilians safer. So, but, you know, it seems to me that Kagame holds the cards in his hands here, and it's not quite clear what terms he might agree to or not agree to. So,
if he comes
we'll
to the
table.
We'll
have to see what happens on Friday.
Yeah, if he comes to the table, because it wasn't that the problem in December, that the DRC wanted to negotiate
so
with
that
him,
too.
Not
M23.
The issues in
December seem to be that over whether or not DRC, you know, should negotiate directly with M23.
Okay.
You know, Tshisekedi didn't really want to do that because he says the M23 is just a proxy for Rwanda. And Rwanda says, no, you've got to negotiate with the M23 because they have genuine grievances, and they're Congolese. You see. Mm. So that broke down. Now, but, you know, the South Africans, as I understand it, maybe and perhaps only because of what happened this last week, are putting pressure on Tshisekedi to talk directly to the M23.
All right. We hope they do. Peter Faricius, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Foreign policy journalist helping us understand a little bit about the murky and slightly confusing information that's come out. For greater context, particularly if you missed that press conference this afternoon, have a listen to what Defense Minister Angie Motshekga had to say with the circumstances surrounding these attacks over the past week.
Kaya talk.
How much more?
On the street.
Information does anybody need?
On the air.
I just have to also apologize to colleagues, because I've been caught up in these meetings last week, so there could be up-to-date information which I've not been able to share with them. But I can assure South Africans that the generals that are there are highly skilled, highly experienced, they are on the ground and capable of leading. And they are not the only leadership that is there. It's us as part of the other forces. So we have, for instance, from UNESCO, we even have your Bangladesh, we have more than 10 countries for the UNESCO. So there are generals that are in good supplies there to lead the force. In terms of Sami DRC, our force commander is a South African, his deputy is a Tanzanian, and the third deputy is a Malawian, and they're highly skilled generals. So I just think in terms of because I saw them, I met them, and engaged with them. So I can assure people that there is leadership that is there. In terms of resources, that's why I'm apologizing to colleagues. I say I personally went to Goma, and I got briefing from all the generals. At no stage did they say they have no ammunition. We reinforce on the basis that because there's been this escalated hostilities, then we spoke back home with the meeting that general attended with the National Council of Arms to say it's going to be very important, because the situation is very fluid and very problematic. It's going to be important for us to reinforce to make sure that we don't reach a stage where we don't have. But at no stage did any of the generals that I spoke, even the force leader, said to me, "We've run out of ammunition." No, even Tanzania was reinforcing, and even itself, DRC was reinforcing. But because of the intensity, we felt that to be on the safe side, you need to reinforce, because you're not sure how long it's going to last. On the first day, the commander said that they fought the whole night. And that's why we felt that because we're not armed to go and fight, we're armed there to go and keep peace. And now that we're caught in the crossfire, it's going to be important for us to reinforce. That's why we reinforce. But there was no state, because I've heard this thing that they ran out of food. And that's why I said, at Goma, I went to our logistics center. There was no stage where they said, Minister, we have no food. No, personally, none of the generals told me that they've run out. We reinforced because we felt, because of the intensity, it is very risky. On whether we're concerned, it's just a big concern. A war, it's one of the ugliest things. So everybody will be concerned. And that's why there's this whole running around. Minister Lamula will tell you, yesterday we met until midnight. The other day we met until 10. To really make sure that we can assist the warring parties to avoid a full-scale war. Because what would have happened at Goma, DRC forces surrendered. Today we're told DRC, so which means that could be a battalion, that could be a group that surrendered. Now they've surrounded Goma, they're fighting M23. So, and that's where there's this a tense situation and there are hostilities. And we're getting reports on an ongoing basis that despite the fact that they said they're withdrawing, there's war taking place between the two forces. On the flag, I don't know where I slipped it or where I could have missed it. I said, after talking to M23, it actually wrote to us to say they need a safe package to go and remove their deceased. On the other hand, ourselves, we just wanted them to understand that we're not part of their battle. We're just peacekeepers. Then we agreed on hoisting a white flag to allow a safe passage for them to remove their deceased, which I'm told is it's a conventional practice in war. On the other hand, ourselves, needed that same package to go and deliver some of the resources that we went to top up at SAGI and also remove. And at SAGI at that stage yesterday, there were no disease on our side. There were no injured on our side. It was to give M23 safe passage, which is a request, and that's why the white flag was hosted. But it was also important for us to indicate from to DRC where the fire were coming to say, this is us. So if you fire here, you're not firing DRC, you're firing us. So we're not surrendering, because you don't surrender with the flag. I'm told you surrender to, we are supposed, if we're surrendering, we would have gone to UNESCO to say we're giving up. But the white flag was to really allow people safe package to go and collect their diseased and their injured. And also indicate that this is who we are, we're peacekeepers, we're not part of the battle, so they shouldn't fire our direction.
Welcome back to Point of View. My name is Rifilo Moloto, standing in this evening on behalf of Phumelo Modene. It's such a pleasure to be in your company, particularly on such a critical topic about what's happening right here on our own continent. If you missed it, please do catch up on kaya959.co.za. My earlier conversation with Peter Fabricius, foreign policy journalist, helping us contextualize what's happening here. My next guest is even just as well positioned to do so. Michaela Rong is a veteran Africa correspondent and author. You probably, well, I first encountered her with It's Our Turn to Eat, a story about a whistleblower, high-ranking whistleblower in Kenya. But her first book, In the Footsteps of Mr. Kurtz, actually chronicled her experiences in DRC as far back as when it was called Zaire. She's been covering Africa for 20 years, a British journalist, and also the author of Do Not Disturb. Michaela Rong, thank you so much for joining us this evening on Kaya's Point of View.
It's a pleasure.
All right. So we've been talking a little bit about the more recent activities and announcements and the like of what's been happening on the ground in the DRC since the taking over of Goma by the M23 rebels. Could you please provide us with a little bit of context here? We were speaking just now with Peter Fabricius, and he was highlighting, the Tutsi rebels versus the who are seen to be backed by the Congolese and the Hutus from Rwanda, that are backed by Hutus from M23, who are supposedly backed by Rwanda, which takes us right back to a story that we are all familiar with from decades ago. Is that how deep this current story runs?
Yes, but I think you got your ethnic groups mixed
up. Oh, no.
It's all right. The M23 are basically made up of Congolese members of the Tutsi community. As you probably know, President Kagame is a member of the Tutsi community. And he has been really, his excuse for this intervention, this incredibly muscular support that he's been giving the M23, is that the Congolese Tutsi community faces extermination at the hands of Hutus who fled into Congo after the genocide and who retain an extremist agenda. And most analysts I know reject that because they say that Congolese Tutsis in eastern Congo, the reason they have a really hard time is because they're seen now by the Congolese population as being on Rwanda's side and as being possible infiltrators. So this goes back a very long way. And in fact, if you look at Rwanda's interventions in Congo, they really started in 96, 97 when they supported a rebel group called the AFDL, which ended up walking in all the way to Kinshasa and toppling, as you said, President Mobutu of what was then Zaire. Yes. And really, ever since then, I think it's fair to say that Rwanda has sort of seen eastern Congo as its own backyard. It's not really ever shown any respect for Congo's national borders. And it's a very mineral-rich area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you've been talking a lot about the mining in Daba. You know, eastern Congo is the prime source of coltan and gold and tin. And a lot of that produce for years now has been going out via Rwanda, not Congo. So Congo's been losing all its sort of tax income from those resources. And it seems to be, I mean, what we're seeing more and more, people are talking about de facto annexation by Rwanda of a very fertile, very mineral rich part of Congo.
Thank you so much much for that, because that was going to be my next question. It seems as though the global environment is ripe for annexation just to be undertaken, whether it's President Putin threatening Greenland, what we've seen in the Ukraine by Russia, what we see in Gaza, Lebanon, Syria from Israel. And I'm wondering whether the timing seems ripe. To your point, from a mineral extraction perspective, with no reserves of its own, Rwanda has become one of the bigger global exporters of minerals. And while Kagame, President Kagame of Rwanda, will go as far as to say, yes, well, the Congolese are smuggling it through our country. That's not our fault. He doesn't actually go as far as to say this might be a stated or not stated goal of our own. What should we believe?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. You only have to read the UN reports by their group of experts who they send on the ground. They do regular reports. The last one was in December. And if you just read about the sort of, firstly, the military support Rwanda has been given the M23, it's got its, it had its, even before this latest push, there were thousands of Rwandan troops active in eastern Congo. And also, you know, that systematic mineral extraction. There's a mine called Rubaya, which is a key source of coltan. You know, a lot of that produce was being sort of haphazardly smuggled out via Rwanda, of course, depriving, you know, Kinshasa of its, of all its tax revenue. But what the report makes clear is this is now absolutely systematic. So the minerals are being hoovered up by Kigali. And if you look at Kigali's export figures, you know, Rwanda's export figures, you would think it had the biggest gold mines in Africa, which it doesn't. Everyone knows that there's very, very little minerals in Rwanda, but it's exporting so much gold, and it's Congolese gold.
Is it likely, and we've heard now from our Minister of Defense that, or excuse me, our Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Ronald Nomolo, that a SADC summit is expected this Friday to resume what, you know, the Luanda process that fell apart in December, and some sort of negotiation. Would you agree with Peter's assessment that South Africa will probably try to push Kagame to come to the table, even though he said, talk to M23 and not me?
Well, what I was hearing is Rwanda had said it was, he had no interest in an Angolan-led mediation or peace process, yes, and that the Rwandans have already signaled they don't want to be part of it. I also understand that both DRC and Rwanda are saying they're not going to turn up to that promised East African negotiation meeting that was being called by William Ruto.
Yes.
So I don't think Kagame is interested in these meetings. He basically refused to turn up in Luanda in Angola in December for the last scheduled meeting. So I think, you know, he's making it clear that he's interested in actions and not words at the moment. And what he's doing is he's establishing facts on the ground. And the timing is not coincidental. This is a moment where the US, which was one of the countries that was most critical of the role he was playing in Eastern Congo, is completely engrossed in, you know, all
domestic
these Trump
inaugurations
and confirmations. So their eye is not on the ball. And in fact, they've announced a global suspension of aid. So they're just not engaging with Congo at the moment.
Or any
so I think
of, or in
establishing
Africa.
Facts on the ground.
All right. So it seems as though, and to be honest, as I was saying to Peter, I think it took so long for our own administration to bring us feedback that it was we don't seem to be a very strong player for negotiation. However, the DRC president did call for the United Nations Security Council to wade in. Do you think that the United Nations, albeit it has not covered its face itself in glory in past in recent months, but do you think it might have some form of leverage in some discussions here?
Well, we saw an emergency meeting on Sunday with the UN Security Council, and there were some very strong statements from the US, from South Africa, from Britain, from France, from Belgium, and from other African countries, all condemning the M23 intervention and Rwanda's support for it. But, you know, where is the follow-up action? I'm sorry about that. Where is the follow-up action? It's time for actual, I think, you know, we've gone into the area where you have to have trade embargoes, sanctions, people put on travel ban lists. Paul Kagame, who is an habitué of the red carpet, you know, he's always been invited to conferences.
They love him. Yeah,
you know, it's stop inviting him. You know, I mean, it's really time for action. We've seen a lot of strong words, but it's not been enough.
Particularly, even if he had to deny M23, the involvement of the Democratic Liberation Forces of Rwanda starts to make this a sovereign on sovereign engagement. I'm just wondering, you know, if we can take a step back to a more global perspective. As we said, increasingly global governments are increasingly internally focused. That goes for not only the United States, it goes for Europe. And look, anyone who might be able to benefit from their friend who's always on our red carpet in a time when we're looking for the kinds of minerals that will keep the EV revolution going, one can imagine they might turn a bit of a blind eye, particularly with our institutions failing to come through with action. Is that likely? And if I may add to that, South Africa was very willing to wade into the ICJ on behalf of Palestine very quickly in 2023, but seems to have very kid gloves when it comes to fellow African leaders and their breaches of international law. What is your sense of confidence that action will be forthcoming?
I think this is an incredibly risky time for Africa. I mean, increasingly, I think people are seeing Kagame's intention as being redrawing the colonial borders, the old colonial borders of Rwanda, so that they basically include a whole strip of desirable Congolese territory. And in fact, it was very interesting because the head of the military in Uganda, who's the son of Yoweri Museveni, was rejoicing on Twitter just today and sort of saying, great, we're going to be redrawing the white colonial borders. You know, the whole point of the Organization of African Unity, which was set up, you know, after all these African countries achieved independence, one of the basic principles was colonial borders will be sacrosanct. Mm. And the reason for that was because the danger was that if they weren't sacrosanct, there would be endless, endless wars around Africa. And I think, you know, it seems to me that Kagame has decided, you can get the sense from his rhetoric, from what Rwandan politicians have been making speeches about the fact that the old Rwandan kingdom, the old Rwandan empire used to extend beyond its colonial borders. That's been an increasing trend to make this kind of story spreading around, you know, at every encounter. And I think we're looking at an attempt to redraw borders. And that has really dangerous implications. And, you know, South Africa is one of the key powers, key African countries that people look to take the lead on these kind of conflicts. You know, it's South Africa in the south and Nigeria in the west. Mm. And if they don't put their foot down, I think this sets a really dangerous precedent.
Certainly does. I really hate how it's echoing what's happening in the rest of the world. But and I have a feeling we will hide behind that, well, you know, our buddy Russia's doing it, you know. Concerning times on the continent in particular, but in the world in general. Michaela, it's such a privilege to speak to you. Thank you for your writing. Thank you for your insights tonight. And we hope we can invite you again on Point of View.
With great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Michaela Rong, is a veteran Africa correspondent and author. Her books, Do Not Disturb, as well as It's Our Turn to Eat, are really critical assessments of the African condition, Do Not Disturb being a novel, and It's Our Turn to Eat, and in the footsteps of Mr. Kivu are nonfiction.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.